It was export sales report day, and the numbers did not disappoint. Bean sales have put together a very nice string of daily announcements. And new crop corn sales last week, top 2 million tons. Those are some sales that remind me of when the U.S. was the only game in town for corn exports. And it makes me wonder, is the fall lineup at the Gulf suddenly starting to get crowded?
Live from the vast digital frontier, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll chat with Kent Beadle from CHS Hedging. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis, thank you very much. Yeah, not a terrible performance in corn and soybeans today. Wheat was a little tough. Some strength. Corn, steady to a penny higher. Soybeans, we'll call it 5 to 7 cents higher. Soybean meal also worked to the upside. Soybean oil was lower. This wheat market, the winter wheat market in particular, nickel to 7 cents lower. Spring wheat, 4 to 5 cents lower. Mm-hmm. Cattle, some under some pressure today. Mixed trade in feeder cattle and hogs responded to the export sales report with some solid gains in the nearby contracts there. So,
all right,
really, and overall, not a bad performance as we head into the end of the week. I was fairly encouraged by it.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear you're encouraged. You know, it's better to come on the air with a sense of encouragement than well, just about anything else, I would say.
Absolutely. So, what does this mean for the export? Is the Gulf getting crowded for this fall? That's one of the things that I want to talk about with Kent Beadle today. Kent does a great job of tracking everything that happens down as far as the export lineup goes. I want to talk to him about that, the impact that it might have on prices going into the fall, the impact that it might have on the balance sheets for the 2020-21 marketing year. So we've got a lot of ground that we want to cover with Kent from CHS Hedging. Okay, let's get to it. What was moving prices around today?
Well, Chip, export sales of wheat in the weekend of July 16 totaled nearly 617,000 metric tons, all for delivery in the 2020 and 21 marketing year. This was the second consecutive week sales topped pre-report trade expectations. While higher prices in Europe get some credit for the sales surge, trade sources say the pressure on the dollar is also attracting some additional export demand to the U.S. September hard red winter wheat 7 1/4 cents lower, 4.41 1/4. September soft red fell a nickel to 5.29 1/2. September spring wheat 4 3/4 lower at 5.10 even, Chip.
Yeah, you know, when you look at the dollar index chart, that's one thing. But take a look at one of the competitors on wheat exports. And this time I decided to take a look at Australia. That's the Australian dollar. That's basically a bottom left, top right chart right now. The Australian dollar is gaining against the U.S. dollar, and that's making us more competitive in the export market for wheat.
Corn export sales in the weekend of July 16 totaled nearly 2.55 million metric tons. Of the tally, 221,000 metric tons were sold for old crop delivery, with nearly 2.33 million tons sold for delivery in the 2020 and 21 marketing year. China was far and away the largest buyer of new crop corn and booked 1.96 million metric tons in the week. The latest update to the U.S. Drought Monitor reminded crop watchers of dry conditions in western Iowa, and that limited selling interest in the market today. September corn futures were a half cent higher, 3.28.
Yeah.
December corn firmed 0.75 cents to 3.35 1/2. March corn closed at 3.45 1/2. That's up 3/4. I'm underwhelmed.
I was just going to use that word. You sound underwhelmed by the price performance today.
I am.
Part of it has to do with the simple fact, and I want to talk to Kent about this one too. It's the simple fact that the funds are stepping in there, and are they defending that short position that they've got? If they're doing that, it's going to take a major event to kind of force them to exit those short positions.
Soybean export sales of nearly 2.67 million metric tons were reported for the weekend of July 16. Of the total, 365,000 tons were for delivery in the current marketing year, with 2.3 million sold for new crop delivery. China once again topped the list of new crop buyers with 1.486 million tons of bookings. Traders also suggest the 669,000 tons booked by unknown destinations could also be eventually headed to China. USDA this morning also announced the sale of 132,000 metric tons of U.S. beans for delivery to China in 2020 and 21. August soybean futures were 7 cents higher at 9.06 and a quarter. September beans jumped 6 and 3/4 cents to $9.75. November bean futures closed at $9 even. That's up 4.5 today, Chip.
I'm encouraged that we got to close at $9 again. It certainly suggests to me that the market is willing to push to the upside.
Net cotton sales reductions of 13,000 bales for the 2019-20 marketing year were a disappointment, but new crop bookings of nearly 11,000 bales helped to limit selling in back month futures. October cotton 106 lower, 61.68. December cotton fell 62 points to 61.92. And on the livestock side, South Korea and Japan were solid buyers of U.S. beef last week, pushing the total to 15,600 metric tons. August live cattle futures were down 65 cents to $100.85. December cattle fell $1.10 to $109.02 and a half, and August feeders jumped 50 cents to $142.02 and a half. And on the snout side, pork sales of just over 32,000 metric tons were down slightly from the four-week average. Mexico topped the list, with China also a notable buyer. August hogs were $1.82 and a half higher at $54.47 and a half, and Dees gained 75 cents to $52.20. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Oliver, how you doing this week?
No, pretty good. Nice to see these corn and bean markets a little bit firmer here today. But I tell you what, it's been a lot like watching paint dry. It's just been a slow trade. But hopefully we can get some things going in the right direction. I'm a little bit more optimistic on those beans, as you had mentioned, continuing to grind higher and just kind of lingering around that psychologically significant $9 handle. There's a lot of resistance from 905 to about 912. 200-day moving average, those recent highs, as well as the 50% retracement, are basically the middle of the trading range from those highs back in January to those contract lows. So a lot of interaction between buyers and sellers there. So I think the next couple of sessions into mid-next week is going to be very telling for this market going forward.
Okay. The funds in corn, still on the short side of the market, felt like maybe they're defending those short positions. Is that what you're seeing?
110%, and we're getting towards that time of year where we're just kind of running out of time. We're running against the shot clock here for some sort of weather concern. I don't think that that's going to come. I don't think that it was really ever there outside of some isolated areas, so I think it's going to be a lot of work. We're going to need to see some sort of fundamental change, and at this point, you're looking for a change in exports to really get these shorts out of their positions, but they've been defending it like crazy here as of late.
Yeah, and we're a long ways from the first notice day against that September contract.
Yeah, absolutely. Potentially we can get this market to work a little bit higher, 345, maybe fill that gap in that new crop contract. That's what we're looking at pretty closely. But I think asking for anything much more than that, the way fundamentals are right now, I think it's asking for a lot. And I'm not saying the market's necessarily going to roll out of bed, but I wouldn't be surprised to see just a choppy sideways trade until we get a new fundamental catalyst.
Gotcha. 60-day season starts today. Who you got in the series?
I don't know.
The Cubbies in there. Just do it.
All right, the Cubbies. The Cubbies.
Love it. Thanks, Oliver. That is Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. We've got Kent Beadle from CHS Hedging up next. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize Corteva for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Yes. All right. All right, man. Go Cubs, go. Let's get her done. 60-game season, although there are still some skeptics. And, hey, Jeff Wilson, keep it to yourself. The Brewers, no. I'm not liking that. Uh-uh. But I just got a message from Wiesmeyer. You ready for this? National star Juan Soto tests positive for coronavirus, is left off Washington's opening day roster. Jim just made the prediction, even though it is supposed to start today, he says this season will not happen.
Really?
I certainly hope.
That's
that
just sour
Jim
grapes because Soto
wrong.
Is a no-go.
That could very well be. But it's
I could have
be
said
tough
anything
to
ahead of that. I just wanted to say Soto is a no-go.
Yeah, I know. I know. but it's going to be something that they're going to deal with. All, you know, every team's going to deal with it all season sure. long. There's just no question about it that cases are going to be popping up. No doubt. All right.
Cases at the bat, maybe? A new twist on the old poem?
Did you just say cases at the bat?
I'm afraid I did. Inappropriate? Too soon?
Too soon? Casey is like way old. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Thank you for that.
Yes. All right. Let's bring in Kent Beadle. Kent is Agurian, risk consulting manager with CHS Hedging. How you doing, Kent? It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on, Chip. Let me throw out there that I like the Twins and the Cubs in the World Series. So,
well, then we saw a preview of it last night. Yeah.
Pretty good ball game, too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was, no doubt about it. Dude, you and I are in the same situation. Kent usually makes a trip north of the border to do some fishing. I always make a trip north of the border to do some fishing. And we had to stay south this year, Kent. Kind of disappointing, huh?
Well, it was very disappointing for our trip. You know, we normally catch between 500 and 1,000 walleyes in a week trip, and this year we didn't catch 50. So it made for the shore lunches to be pretty sparse, let me tell you.
Yeah, I hear you, buddy. I hear you. We'll get past it. We'll get past it.
We'll
get back up there.
Brighter days ahead, Chip.
That's right. And you know what? The way that this corn crop looks right now, the way the bean crop looks right now, I know that there's some touchy areas out there, but it really looks like it's got better days ahead, too.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. And, you know, the touchy areas, there's an area in, you know, southwest, south central Iowa that, you know, southwest of Des Moines that just keeps missing out on rain. There's some areas in Indiana and Ohio that are still a little bit tough. There were some tough areas that have definitely gotten some rain and gotten some relief. And I think in general, there's plenty of reason to be optimistic. I do wonder, however, you know, given the price levels that we've had over the entire growing season, if the American farmer has put as much love and tender care as he normally does into this year's crop, and by that I mean fertilizer, I mean fungicides, things along those lines, things that tend to give us a good yield boost and allow that top end for us to be made. You know, this would be a year that you might expect growers to skimp on some of those things. And I don't think that you will see the results of that, say, on the August crop report. We're going to be counting ears. And not much more than that. We're going to be running weather models. The USDA is going to be running weather models and determining these yields. But, you know, some of those things that we may not be doing could show up in future yields when we start actually getting ears weighed and start establishing a closer yielded estimate than the one we're going to get here in August.
Okay. All right, you know, I've seen a lot on social media, but it's coming in from my area in particular, eastern Iowa. But boy, they're out there with the aerial applicators putting fungicide down, if they need to put some insecticide down, they're doing that. Seems like in this area they're taking pretty good care of it. But you're right, Kent. If you're in a spot where soils are dry and you're looking at it thinking to yourself, why am I going to put any more money into a $3 corn crop? It's a tough decision to make sometimes.
Well, it's especially tough when we're in, you know, essentially year five, year six of what are an awful lot cheaper prices than what we had for, you know, a number of years from, say, 2007 through 2013 to 2014. You know, the ag economy is a lot tougher. We all know that. And yeah. I think the better farmers are going to do what they do to get the yield, but that's not going to be everyone.
Right, right. I wish I could find the tweet that said this, but somebody made an excellent point. They would rather spend the money on the fungicide than harvest one way in one direction on down corn this fall, even though it's still worth the same amount of money. So, you know, there's something to be said for that, too. The farm economy, ag economy, Kent, is that where the acres went this year when we, you know, we're off like almost 8 million in principal planted acres from March intentions? Was it just guys kind of throwing their hands in the air?
Well, I think so, and especially marginal acres. And I think if you go back and you take a look at history, you will absolutely find out that when we have extended period of lower prices, we see reductions in acreage. A lot of the analysts, they just don't believe it. They think acres are finite. They're going to be there year after year. It's just not true. It hasn't been true in the past, and it turned out not to be true this year. And, you know, we had, you know, a lot of discussion around that after the March intentions report, which seemed very high to me, given those economic challenges. And, you know, I remember, you know, Lance Honig on your show talking about the fact that he thought, well, you know, please don't compare to last year's 315 and change. Please compare to 319, because that's what we've planted in the past, that being total number of acres. And it didn't turn out to be the case. And economic challenges definitely have something to do with that.
Yeah, there's absolutely no question about it. You know, when you go back to 2014, when we had the peak in the principal crop acres, we are now 14. This year is 14.8 million acres below that, Kent. If that's not a movement away from planting these principal crops, I don't know what is.
No, and you know, a lot of people have just sort of assumed that somehow or another we're going to plant 180 million acres combined of corn and soybeans. You know, we really only did it once. Yeah. We did it once. And, you know, the USDA in March told us, well, we're going to not only do it again, but we're going to do it, you know, to the most ever. And it just never really made a lot of sense to me. And, you know, the thing that makes a person a little bit angry about it is that, you know, that was almost a billion bushels of corn that sat on our balance sheet for next year, you know, for 3 months, essentially. It really did take away some opportunity to get some marketing done. And, of course, if that didn't take it away, then, you know, COVID put the nail on it shortly thereafter.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And I like the way that you put that. You had the right order on it, because if we would have been talking about 92 million of planted acres even before COVID really started to destroy some demand out there, we would have had a great opportunity to make some sales in here. But now with the demand destruction that we're dealing with, it's really difficult. I'm not going to say that that we're wrapped up on corn, because it's going to come back into the conversation. But are you feeling a need to do anything on the risk management side in this corn right now, Kent?
Oh, sure. Oh, yes. Okay. You know, we've the first rally hit some targets, and then we've lowered some targets. We aren't there yet. We may take a look at doing some other things. I've taken a look at some short option strategies, call option strategies, and or short futures and short straddles, something to pull a little time value out of the marketplace. We think it's just going to be a grind this year. You know, rallies are definitely going to run into resistance. Farmers are going to sell rallies. Speculators are definitely selling rallies. And, you know, obviously the balance sheet doesn't look very positive right now. On the more positive side, you know, we're still not necessarily convinced about how good this yield really might be. And, you know, we still have the month of August where we need to fill these ears, but we do like the, you know, the export demand side of things. with the futures where they are today. Some of the things you've talked about as far as the dollar helping us out a little bit. And we think we're going to have a very good export year next year.
All right, good export year next year. One of the things that you said there, I don't like to have to do it, lowering the targets, but what that is some flexibility in a marketing plan. I want to talk about that a little bit when we come back. We're talking with Kent Beadle from CHS Hedging. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. And the first headline is something that I want to talk about with Kent when we come back. Prices continue to climb at Chinese corn auctions. China sold 100% of the nearly 4 million metric tons of state reserve corn put up at auction this week. Prices up 3.4% from last week. China warns the U.S. to think carefully about where their relationship was heading. Wow, think carefully. Brazil buying Russian wheat. The GOP appears to be pushing for around $20 billion in ag spending in the coming aid package. Ethanol and indemnity funding for livestock producers is in that bill. Sky-high Chinese pork imports continue and beef stocks rise in June. Frozen pork stocks well under year-ago levels. Hey, check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. In the morning, you're coffeeed up and you're thinking. In the afternoon, you've calmed down, but you're still thinking. We're here all day. AgriTalk.
So in the afternoon, Davis, I make the switch over to, I'll have a can of pop. All right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll admit it. Yeah, my favorite's a Diet Pepsi. Well, that's what I like to drink. Yeah, just before we went on the air today, I'm glad I didn't have coffee because just before we went on the air today, I dumped about half of it down my front.
Oh, jeez. I've been successful in making the switch away from coffee to loose leaf tea. It sounds kind of weird. It's nothing that I ever thought I would be saying, but it's absolutely true.
It sounds very much like you, Davis.
It doesn't it, though? It felt
it
right.
It does.
Yeah.
Did it feel good the first time you tried that?
No.
No?
But you know, I've acquired the taste now. I like to myself into change so I never get into a rut.
Please tell me you're paying up for the organic.
Actually, I am. Yeah. I don't know if I'm paying up or not. I haven't price shopped it. But it's good stuff, and I'll tell you what, I'm reducing my methane, too, because I do have a hibiscus and lemongrass blend that I drink in the evenings to calm down.
Good. That is awesome. Good for you.
You could about good make an impossible burger out of me right now. That's how healthy I am, baby.
You are an impossible burger. Oh, man. Okay, let's get to a recap of the markets before we get back to Kent.
Chip, September hard red winter wheat was 7¼ cents lower, 4.41¼. September soft red fell a nickel, 5.29½. September corn futures a half cent higher, 3.28. December corn firmed 0.75 cents to 3.35½. August soybean futures 7 cents higher, 9.06¼. September beans jumped 6¾ cents to $9.75. October cotton 1.06 lower at 61.68. On the livestock side, August live cattle futures down 65 cents to $100.85. And August feeders up 50 cents, 142.02½. August hogs, $1.82½ higher, 54.47½. That is your quick market recap, pal.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Kent Beadle is Agurian Risk Consulting Manager with CHS Hedging. He's my guest today. Kent, what do you make of the way that Chinese feed millers are buying up those corn, the corn supplies at those auctions?
Well, I'll tell you what, I never, ever believed that the bottom line total that the USDA has on their balance sheet for Chinese corn stocks was ever accurate. Post that revision that was made here now a couple of years ago when the Chinese revised production for 10 years.
Right.
If you go back and take a look at Chinese prices over that period of time, They didn't reflect the kind of ending stocks numbers that the USDA had to back themselves into when they accepted those Chinese revisions. And, you know, there are some people in the trade who think that Chinese ending stocks might be something closer to 50 or 60 million tons instead of the couple hundred million tons plus that the USDA is carrying on their balance sheet. And with prices in China at five-year highs, you know, that makes sense. You know, one thing that disappoints me a little bit is that we didn't get more old crop corn business to China this summer. We got some, but we didn't get as much as I had hoped for. And I do think that maybe that has a little something to do with, you know, the quality of the crop that we grew last year. And I think that if the Chinese are exhausting their state-owned reserves, they're going to want to fill them up, but they're going to want to fill them up with higher quality corn that is maybe a little more storable. That is the crop that I think that we're growing this year. And that's one of the reasons, as I told you, I'm very optimistic about the amount of corn we might be able to sell to the Chinese, you know, this fall and probably throughout, you know, a good chunk of the spring and into next year until there's more South American supply available again. And maybe even through that period of time, given their obligations to us under the Phase One agreement.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just to put that number in perspective that Kent threw out there early, 50 million metric tons, that's only like 1.85, 1.9 billion bushels, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a small number.
It is. When you consider their hog herd, even the reduced hog herd is way bigger than our herd. So,
well, I think that when you look at the actions of the Chinese in the marketplace here over these years, and you always need to watch what they do, not what they say. I think their underlying feed demand is probably understated. I think that their supplies were probably overstated. Now, that's not to say that some of their revisions might not have made some sense. Keep in mind, they were supporting their farmers to the tune of about $10 a bushel there for a few years. And when you do that, you tend to reap what you sow. You know, pay somebody $10 a bushel and you get lots of supply, or you get more supply. But, you know, they probably got more than they needed. And I don't think that they have the same sort of storage facilities that we have here. I don't think they have the ability to keep that excess supply to the same extent. And my gut is that a bunch of it disappeared, and that's why prices are high. That is why they're very well subscribed in their auctions right now. And it's, you know, quite frankly, why I think they're going to buy corn from us here going forward.
Gotcha. Gotcha. It all makes sense to me. We have put together a very nice string of daily export sales announcements on soybeans, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. In fact, I think I added them up just before we got on, and maybe 1.3 million tons here this week for new crop sales, which all of which I suspect are going to be loaded and executed between October and December 1st, or I'm sorry, December 31st. You know, we've already got total soybean export sales on the books for new crop at 10 million tons, which is, you know, pushing up against one of the highest totals at this time of year that we've had going into new crop. You know, it's very, very positive. It's optimistic. It gives me some faith that maybe the USDA export estimate for next year might be understated a little bit. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind that in this Phase One agreement, Chinese have obligated to $36.5 billion for the first year, but it's $43.5 billion for the second. And so, you know, we have to keep in mind the South American is out there with supply as well, and the Chinese don't want to alienate them. They are going to want to buy South American supplies when South American supplies are cheapest. But we've still got a pretty a long window here in front of us before that South American supply hits the marketplace. Heck, it's not even in the ground yet. So, you know, we're getting some help with the weaker dollar, although, you know, we're really not weaker against Argentina. And the Brazilian rebound in the Real has kind of faded here as of late.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, we're in a better position, and I think we're going to continue to sell beans.
Right. It feels like it's going to be crowded at the Gulf this fall. With all the corn exports we're booking, beans exports, there's a big program coming.
It's a big program, and we are going to be busy, and, of course, you know, we have some issues on the river too, as we're trying to get some repairs made. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that all gets wrapped up by the time that a new crop comes off. You know, we also have some concerns, I guess, about rail freight to some extent. A lot of chatter about that Dakota Access Pipeline going down in North Dakota and the impact that might have on rail freight rates out of places like Minnesota and the Dakotas out to the West Coast. So, you know, we may have a few transportation challenges. Certainly with the size of the program that we have right now, all of the export points are going to be very busy. They are going to need to be very efficient, but I don't believe at this time that we have overbooked our capacity.
Okay.
I believe we do have a little bit more capacity yet to be able to sell.
Good. Okay. Let's do the same, run down the same thing on soybeans. Are you feeling the need to get some risk management in place on beans?
You know, we did hit a target here right around $9, and but I'm still not all that far ahead in our soybean marketing for next year. We're 25-30%, and I'm actually pretty comfortable there right now, based on where I think ending stocks are going to be, and the fact that we're going to be tighter all through the year and through next year, and that we're going to have to take, you know, we're going to have some weather opportunities probably in South America. You know, we do have a burgeoning La Nina out there. We'll see if that has some impact on their production prospects for next year. But, you know, a $9.50 to $10 opportunity in this new crop, soybean crop that's in the field, I still think there's a possibility for that. I really do.
Okay. And then the topic that I mentioned at the end of the last segment, I've only got 30 seconds for this, but you got to stay flexible with these plans. If the fundamentals changing, you need a lower target. You need to lower a target, right, Kent?
Yeah. And that was hard to do on the onset of COVID, because we really didn't know how much impact it was going to have, number one, and number two, when you're lowering your targets at this price, you're essentially lowering your targets to below break even prices for many growers. So you have to be careful with that. That being said, we think that there's a decent crop coming, and a big rally in corn would be a surprise. We're going to take advantage of rallies when they come.
Gotcha. Kent, it's always fun to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me on, Chip. I appreciate it.
You betcha. That is Agurian Risk Consulting Manager Kent Beadle with CHS Hedging. Davis and I will be back to wrap up hour two of AgriTalk.
You're listening to AgriTalk, where the conversation begins. Join us at 855-4-TALK-AG.
Welcome back. Davis, what do you say we put a wrap on the second hour of today's AgriTalk, huh?
No. Let's just keep going, baby.
You just want
Let's
to
keep not shut
going.
It down. Let's just keep it rolling. Yeah,
right.
That's what
All
I'm
right.
talking about.
Yeah. So, we had the call from Mailman Mike yesterday. Was it yesterday or was it the day before? Day before.
It was yesterday. Day before?
Was it yesterday? Okay, whatever. Earlier this week. Mailman Mike was calling in with a crop report from Western Iowa. So I was really interested in checking out the drop monitor here today and see what it shows us. And he was talking about an 8-county area, Denison, Carroll area over there. And I tell you what, the guy did a great job of kind of pinpointing where it is driest. It's all of crop district 4 in Iowa is in at least abnormally dry conditions. Most of it is at least a moderate drought. And get this, we've now got severe drought in West Central to Central. It sneaks over into Crop District 5, which is right in the middle of the state. And it does sneak down into Crop District 7 in the southwest part of the state. So it's dry. That western half of Iowa is showing up on the drought monitor here, man. It's kind of impressive what it looks like.
I don't like the sound of that.
Yeah, but it just barely gets into eastern Nebraska. It's kind of weird because you got that big glob out there in western Iowa, but then it just barely gets across the river into northeast Nebraska. Of course, it's drier out to the west, and that Hastings area shows up with some moderate drought, but there's no severe drought until you get up to the far northwest corner of Nebraska. We're not seeing any signs, no indication of the severe drought in Nebraska at this time. But there's dry spots up through North Dakota and South Dakota. The driest area in that region on the drought monitor is northeast area, and it kind of slides over into central Minnesota too. So there's that blob in Iowa is really interesting. Illinois looks great. There's one small area of abnormally dry conditions. Wisconsin is fine. It looks really good on the drought monitor map.
Good work,
and then
Wisconsin.
You get over into the far eastern belt, Indiana, Ohio, and it's a mix. Those states are mostly a mix of abnormally dry conditions and moderate drought.
Okay.
This year is not without some warning flags. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like Kent said, when you look at the crop condition report, everything seems to be pretty good. But you go back a couple of weeks ago, that 4th of July when I was out driving around a little bit and checking things out, when we were seeing some stress even in northeast Iowa. Now, that has for the most part been fixed. But it doesn't take much. Now, we get into the second half of the month, and you kind of wonder what this is going to look like. So 6 to 10 day outlook for July 29th through August 2nd, Davis.
Yeah.
It's got some below normal temperatures kind of pushing in from the southeast. Southeast Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Missouri, southern Iowa, most of Illinois, most of Indiana, southwest Ohio, all looking at below normal temperatures July 29th through August 2nd. There's a narrow band of normal temperatures expected before you get into the above normal temperatures in South Dakota, North Dakota, and northern Minnesota. The precipitation is staying to the south. Chances for above normal precipitation, Oklahoma, eastern Kansas, all of Missouri, southwest Illinois, and points to the east and south of that. And then below normal precip is expected in western Nebraska, all of North Dakota, all of South Dakota, northern Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, most of Indiana, Michigan, Ohio. So it's a weird mix, man, that we're looking at going forward here on the weather.
It is. It looks to me like on my weather here, Ohio is getting a little bit of rain right now, even as we speak.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
They definitely need it. And you get around that Indianapolis area there in Indiana, that's been a spot that people have been talking about for quite some time. Yeah, I just called it up myself. They are getting some rain over there.
Yep.
Very scattered. Very scattered.
Well, sure. But I mean, it is 2020, right?
Yes, it is. Kent's perspective on the shipping, I'm glad to hear him say that, yes, it's an aggressive program that we're looking at for this fall, but we haven't outsold our capacity at this point. That's encouraging. And he mentioned the lock and dam repairs that were going on the Illinois River. We had Marty Marr from a director with the Illinois Corn Growers Association on the morning show talking about what is going on there. So if you want an update on that, listen to this morning show. And Marty had a great update on what's going on with funding for those projects, what exactly is happening, and so on. So it's really good. You know, the best thing about being able to go back and listen to the show this morning is that you can do that for free with the AgriTalk app.
Wow. If there's one thing I love, it's free stuff, Chip. Free stuff. Exactly.
There's other free stuff coming your way this year, too.
Oh, there is, you say?
Those crop tour meetings that
we
usually have 400, 500, 600 people at every night during crop tour. Everybody can participate in those meetings this year virtually for free.
Wow. Unlimited capacity, you're saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Not only that.
Yes.
We've also got the Farm Journal Field Days coming your way.
This is going to be
a great
lineup
of speakers. We've got some field demonstrations. We've got farm tours. We've got David Cole. We've got a benefit concert coming your way. All you got to do is go to farmjournalfielddays.com, and you can get all the details there. Oh, and I was just reminded, Machine Repeat's going to have a panel discussion too. So really cool stuff. Really cool stuff. Make sure that you check all of that out. All right, thank you for listening today. We're going to have producer Joe Stackler back in the studio tomorrow. Looking forward to that. For the free-for-all, Weesmeyer, Johnson Haney.